Welcome. You are listening to a recording provided for the use of those who are blind and or print impaired. Materials or items read on Airs LA and the Los Angeles Radio Reading Service are the copyrighted property of the original authors and publishers. No unauthorized use or duplication is permitted. Welcome to episode 310 of Green and Growing in the Garden, the weekly gardening show for the Los Angeles Radio Reading Service. I'm Hugh Ralston, your host and producer, and I look forward to sharing with you over the next 40 minutes updates to our local garden scene and recent articles about gardens, plants, and designers, both in California and around the world. Gardens are in my DNA. I was raised in a family of gardeners, and my grandparents and mother handed down a love of flowers, of orchids, and of roses, among many other gifts. I have been an inveterate gardener for years, from that first six-pack of marigolds I bought at Home Depot in suburban Connecticut to laying out birthday rose garden, planting fruit trees, and rescuing overgrown and underloved gardens, as well as building my own garden library with classic design texts, memoirs, and commentaries from gardeners and designers alike, and, well, just a few glossy coffee table indulgences. I spent years getting to know California's Mediterranean garden landscapes, plants, and climate, even as I have fallen for English and continental garden design traditions, grown fond of the particularities and peculiarities of succulents, which perform so well in our climate, and learned to love and respect the quiet power of a Japanese garden. I've been active in local garden societies and visited botanical gardens across the country and around the world, believing not only in the benefits of gardening itself, but of being in the garden, and of being charmed by that special alchemy of plants, climate, soil, design, place, space, light, and shade. Gardens are a place where we can become more alive and more connected with the world we share with others. And as the good book reminds us, it all began in a garden. Welcome to this week's show. We start this week's show by finishing the calendar of garden events that we started last week. It was published on the 1st of September in the Los Angeles Times. Finishing up the events identified, on September 20th, the Southern California Horticultural Society's 2025 Annual Awards Banquet is from 5 to 9 p.m. at the La Cañada Flint Ridge Country Club and honors native plant horticulturist Catherine Pecra Douni with the Society's first ever Pathmaker Award, created to recognize forward-thinking individuals breaking new ground in horticulture. Pecra Douni developed the native plant nursery for the Wallace-Annenberg Wildlife Crossing Project, collecting about 1 million native seeds from the surrounding region, and has developed several microforests and other ecological landscapes through her business Seed to Landscape. The Society's Horticulturist of the Year Award will go to native plant horticulturist Melanie Bear Keeley, who is developing Alta Vista Natives Nursery in Three Rivers, and her husband, botanist and fire management scientist John E. Keeley. Banquet tickets, which include dinner, are available online, $80, $70 for members. SoCalHort, H-O-R-T, oneword.org is the website. On September 20th and the 21st, Carbon Culture Workshop, hands-on Hugelkultur, is from 8 a.m. to 1 p.m. in Granada Hills, and led by Studio Petrichor's regenerative garden designers Lee Adams and Sean Mastretti. Learn how to build Hugelkultur berms out of logs and layers of wood chips and soil, and lasagna mulching to tamp down weeds. Bring gloves and a water bottle, lunch provided. Register online, $44.52 at eventbrite.com. On September 26th and 27th, California Botanic Gardens Seeds Walking Tour involves guided tours through the state's largest botanic garden dedicated to California native plants to learn about what seeds can tell us about their native plants. Tours available from 8:30 to 9:30 a.m. and from 10 to 11 a.m. both days at the garden in Claremont. Register online, $20, $10 for members, calbg.org. On September 26th through the 28th, 44th edition of the Fascination of Orchids International Festival of Orchids and Exotic Plants is 10 a.m. to 4 p.m. all 3 days at the Rancho Santa Ana Zoo in Santa Ana. The event includes thousands of orchids and exotic plants on display, as well as classes about growing orchids and vendors selling supplies. Purchase tickets online, $5.49 per person, valid for all 3 days. Ticket LEAP, one word, that's L-E-A-P, dot events. On September 27th, Love Your Lands, National Public Lands Day event with Palos Verdes Peninsula Land Conservancy from 9 a.m. to noon at the Conservancy's White Point Nature Preserve in San Pedro. It will be a day of helping to remove non-native plant species, watering new native plantings, seed preparation, garden walks, and activities for children. Participation is free, but registration is required. pvplc.volunteerhub, one word, .com. Also on the 27th, Rewild Planting Design and Installation, led by Tree of Life Nursery co-founder Mike Evans, is from 10 a.m. to noon at the nursery in San Juan Capistrano. Learn how to implement your native plant landscape design. The class is free, but registration is required. Eventbrite.com. And that is it for our event calendar for September. Our next article, also by Jeanette Marantos, is a bit longer than usual. It was published on August 26th. For years, their only yard was a NYC stoop. Now they revel in a SoCal habitat garden. Christian Svanis Colding and his wife, Adriana Estrada, wanted more than water savings when they tore out the sickly lawn outside their craftsman home in Long Beach. The eco-conscious marathon runners were newcomers to the area who wanted a landscape that drew in their neighbors and inspired them to create similar native habitats. Today, the couple's front yard is a study of greens with flashes of color, fragrance, and multiple butterflies and bees, even in late summer when many native plants are dormant and brown. This is a series in the Times based on the view that water-hungry lawns are a symbol of Los Angeles's past. They spotlight yards with alternative low-water landscaping built for the future. It was a friend's tiny apartment garden that brought Christian Svanis Colding and Adriana Estrada together in San Francisco in 1995, but it would be another 26 years after their stints in Denmark, Brooklyn, and Venice Beach before the couple would finally be able to create a garden of their own. And it's not just any garden. Estrada, a longtime surfer and former chair of the Surfrider Foundation's board of directors, particularly wanted a water-saving landscape that was ocean-friendly to keep rainwater in the ground instead of having the runoff wash into the street to collect pollutants before dumping into the ocean. Colding also wanted a garden that inspired and welcomed neighbors so he and his wife could meet members of their new community. And he wanted to include a fence that attractively edged the yard instead of creating a tall barrier to keep others out. Finally, Colding and his wife, who are both marathon runners, wanted a landscape that mimicked the color and fragrance they experienced on their runs in the Laguna Hills and Santa Ana Mountains. Initially, they thought they would focus on succulents and cactus, Colding said, but then we started noticing white sage and sagebrush, cowboy cologne, which is very fragrant, and that made us think, why can't we bring these plants in, too? Their opportunity came in 2021 when they purchased a craftsman-style home built in 1919 from a Pacific ready-cut kit in Long Beach's Craftsman Village Historic District, a community of narrow streets, vintage homes, and wide, well-used porches. Their house is 1,050 square feet, but with the porch and their yard, it feels palatial to Estrada and Colding, who spent 12 years living in an 850-square-foot studio apartment in New York City, where our exterior spaces were the fire escape and front stoop, Estrada said. They love the vitality of the city, but when the COVID-19 pandemic came, we dreaded the thought of being trapped in our one-room apartment for the duration, she said. In the first months of the pandemic, when there was so much fear and uncertainty about how the disease was spread, Colding said their only escape was donning bandanas and taking to the street to run. Then Estrada's mother called to say her father was ill. She said, "You need to spend some time with your dad," Estrada said. And when we got here, we realized our life living in that apartment was no longer part of what we enjoyed. Estrada grew up in Pico Rivera, where her mom tended roses and her dad grew lots of chili peppers in pots. Gardening held no interest for her then. After earning a bachelor's degree in French from Stanford and a law degree from UCLA, she worked as an attorney in San Francisco, met Colding, and realized her true passion was fashion. So the couple moved to New York, where Estrada earned a degree from the Fashion Institute of Technology. The couple then moved to Copenhagen, Colding's birthplace, where Estrada founded the Axe SURF apparel brand before working as a designer for the now-defunct Danish company Deris. And later she designed a men's line for Gramici in California. Although she loved seeing people wear her clothes, I found the business behind fashion more interesting, Estrada said. And she switched professions again to her current career, helping companies with branding and marketing as a partner in the Difference Engine. Colding, a documentary filmmaker, was born in Denmark, but spent his teens in Connecticut, where his parents commuted to jobs in New York City. His mother kept a vegetable garden to supply her love of cooking. Colding moved to San Francisco after college in 1993. I had the fantasy of a lot of kids to come to California to live the dream, he said, and helping a neighbor revive their building's tiny garden fed into that dream. Because coming from Copenhagen, the idea of having a vegetable garden in the winter was very appealing. It also became a classic meet-cute because his gardening neighbor turned out to be Estrada's best friend. That's how the two met and began their journey from San Francisco to New York, Copenhagen, New York again, and California. When they decided to relocate in Southern California, their first step was finding the right community. They chose Long Beach because of its proximity to the beach for surfing and a preponderance of youthful, but not too youthful, vibes. As a couple in their mid-50s, they looked for areas with plenty of independent bookstores, indicators of vitality, and natural wine bars, because patrons of natural wine bars typically embody an unfussy indie spirit, different than old-school wine bars, bars for college kids or sports bars, Colding explained in an email. The home they found in Craftsman Village was just a mile from the ocean and within four blocks of Long Beach's 4th Street Retro Row, which features several indie bookstores and natural wine bars. Once they found their home, they quickly turned their attention to their yard. Their front yard was pathetic, basically 1,500 square feet of weeds and parched patches of Bermuda lawn. And according to Colding, it was a popular stop for neighborhood dogs wanting to relieve themselves. It didn't feel like there was a whole lot of love for any of the property, he said. The couple initially tried planting a few agave in the front, but Estrada was inspired by an article about ocean-friendly gardens in the Surf Rider Foundation's publication, The Drop, which featured work by Long Beach-based landscape architect Kai Craig of California Eco Design, a fellow Surf Rider member. It seemed serendipitous that he lived in Long Beach too, so Estrada and Colding called him for help in designing their front yard. Initially, they thought they would focus on native succulents and cactus for their yard until they began noticing white sage, buckwheats, and sagebrush when they went running in the Laguna Hills and Santa Ana Mountains. That's when the light bulb went off for me. Why not bring some of these beautiful plants from the hills into our yard, Colding said. They did the transformation in chunks. First was designing and building a handsome waist-level fence to frame the coming landscape, all while welcoming visitors with a wide cutout at the gate. That way, people could step off the sidewalk to chat or admire their changing landscape while their dogs drank from the water dish attached to a post. The couple learned they had to maintain the historic parts of their yard with its Hollywood driveway, two strips of concrete instead of a long slab, and concrete walkway to the front porch. In keeping with their desire for a permeable landscape, Craig recommended breaking the front walkway into large squares edged with river rock so rainwater could flow into the ground instead of the street. The other concrete walkways were replaced by flagstones, creating more natural and permeable pathways through the garden. On Craig's advice, Colding and Estrada also enrolled in Long Beach's Lawn to Garden program, which provides a $3 per square foot rebate for landscapes that replace lawns with California native plants or California-friendly plants suitable for a Mediterranean climate. The new plantings must cover 65% of the area that was formerly covered in lawn, no synthetic turf permitted, and include efficient irrigation, a natural mulch to retain moisture, and a way to capture and retain rainwater. The rebates paid for about a third of the $17,000 project, Colding said. Craig satisfied the stormwater capture requirement by building two bioswales, wide, shallow holes filled with smooth stones on either side of the yard and planted thickly around them. The bioswales are designed to collect rainwater so it soaks deep into the ground. The approach seems to be working. The plants are growing lustily in late summer, although Colding only waters them once a week on Saturdays for an hour with drip irrigation. The couple also signed up for Long Beach's Native Plant Parkway program. While Craig's team did most of the work creating the front yard, Colding and Estrada took on the job of removing the weeds and Bermuda grass in the parkway in front of their home. In exchange, the city's parkway program provided free native plants suitable for Long Beach to replant the area and mulch to help retain rainwater. The work was more physically taxing than they expected, Estrada said, especially when the plants were delivered late in the day before they were supposed to leave for an extended trip. I was out planting in the dark, Colding said. But 4 years later, the yard and parkway are a thick tangle of grasses, green shrubs, and vibrant flowers, as Colding makes clear in an endearing short documentary film about their new landscape. The bioswales are effective at stopping runoff and pooling water. Colding said the yard used to have an unsightly pool of standing water after a heavy rain, but they're almost invisible under the mostly native grasses and shrubs in almost every shade of green, from fragrant silvery greens of California sagebrush and white sage to deep green bunches of European gray sedge. Tall, pale green stands of deer grass grow like centuries on either side of the porch, which is laced with non-native pink jasmine, one of the first plants they added before they settled on their palette of native plants. Now the couple's broad porch is their morning retreat. It's where Colding goes every morning to write after he fills the little water dish for passing dogs outside their gate. In the early morning, the east-facing yard is alive with butterflies and bees dancing over electric purple whorls of celestial blue sage and sunny Palmer's Indian mallow growing over the fence. Bright green coyote mint adds more fragrance and color with its violet puffs of flowers. Gray-green Hollywood flame fuchsia are just starting to bloom in long red tubes and are irresistible to hummingbirds. Also, monarch butterflies flit among the tall stands of narrow leaf milkweed, the plant their caterpillars require to survive. Not all the plants are California natives. On the south side of the porch and along their driveway, a few tall, airy, silver-sheen cohuhu, Pittosporum tenuifolium, silver-sheen, provide privacy and beauty with dark reddish stems and small pale green leaves. A blooming pink jasmine frames the porch, and a quick-growing Sierra fig tree they got from the city for free will soon provide shade and fruit at the northeast edge of the front yard. Colding uses the fig's broad leaves to wrap around white fish rubbed with olive oil, salt, and pepper. He said the leaves keep the fish moist while he bakes them for a few minutes in a hot oven and add a slightly nutty flavor. Estrada and Colding plan to paint their home next, and then they look forward to tackling their large backyard, which will be a much bigger and more expensive project. Estrada is impatient to move ahead, but also appreciates that she and her husband need the time to better understand their yard and how it can be used. She advises breaking such yard projects into chunks to make them more affordable and easier to plan. Taking that time has helped them realize they want to retain their raised garden beds and fruit trees in the backyard, including vigorous avocado and pomegranate trees grown from seeds. And they want to add some walkways and more fragrant plantings, as well as a large space to enjoy the shade in the afternoon. They also want the design to allow for the little skunk raccoon possum highway in their backyard, Estrada said. They are one of the few neighborhood homes without a dog in their backyard, so those nocturnal animals travel along their fence line in relative safety. And they do us the favor of eating all the grubs in our raised beds, Colding said. The company's formerly feral calico cat, Margot Tenenbaum, whose name is inspired by the character in the 2001 film The Royal Tenenbaums, seems indifferent to hunting anything but lizards. For now, Estrada and Colding are basking in their perfumed front yard. Just off the porch, fluttering in the breeze, is a large blue and white Casa Hayatus flag, which Colding and Estrada designed to represent their vision of this yard as a place to pause and reflect. It's an idea even built into the fence design, where passers-by often step off the public sidewalk out of the flow to chat or just savor the yard's many colors and scents. The term represents what we want our home to be, Colding said, a space that invites people to step into both the garden and the house. The article concludes with a listing of plants, both native and non-native, and they include Berkeley sedge, also known as foothill sedge, Carex tumilicola, bush monkey flower, Diplacus orontiacus, California lilac, Ceanothus thriciflorus skylark, California sagebrush, Artemisia californica, celestial blue sage, Salvia celestial blue, chaparral beard tongue, Keckleella antirrhinoides, varieties antirrhinoides, coffeeberry, Frangula californica, coyote mint, Monardella villosa, deergrass, Muhlenbergia rigens, giant wild rye, Alemus condensatus, Hollywood flame hummingbird fuchsia, Epilobium canum Hollywood flame, hummingbird sage, Salvia spathacea, Lewis Edmonds Baker's manzanita, Arctostaphylosis bakeri Lewis Edmonds, mountain mahogany, Cercocarpus betuloides, narrowleaf milk Asclepias fascicularis, Palmer's Indian mallow, Abutilon palmeri, pink flowering currant, Ribes sanguineum variety glutinosum, Point St. George aster, Symphyotrichum chilense, Point St. George, red flowered buckwheat, Eriogonum grande variety rubensis, white sage, Salvia apiana, and yarrow, various, Acalea millifolium. And non-native plants include the following: coral bells, Heuchera siren song, European gray sedge, Carex divulsa, pink jasmine, Jasminum polyanthum, Sierra fig, silver sheen cohuhu, Pittosporum tenui folium silver sheen. Other resources are provided through links in the article: Long Beach's Lawn to Garden Program, Long Beach's Native Plant Parkway Program, and Long Beach's Tree Planting Program. We turn next to an article by Amy Farrell, published on the 1st of August in the Financial Times of London. Nowaki's founders on pruning their way to happiness. It's not uncommon for Jake Hobson to dream of trees. I wake up in forests in the middle of the night, says the 53-year-old founder of the Japanese horticultural tools company, Nowaki, a word that appropriately translates as garden tree. Yet when Hobson first moved into the red brick and pyramid-roofed North Dorset home he shares with his wife Keiko and their son Digby in 2011, its long-neglected garden was dominated by concrete paths, five sheds, and towering suburban conifers. It conjured that sepia-toned era of gardening that includes rockeries and gnomes. Hobson says of the secluded plot that lies on an elevated residential street in Shaftesbury, a town enfolded by the vast Blackmore Vale. The irony is that conifers are marvelous and an important part of every garden. I did chop them down, but planted my own purebred Japanese varieties. In lieu of a cabin in the woods, Hobson sketched out a design for a summer house-style shed with the help of a local carpenter, complete with a sheltered porch. This rustic rose-clad arbor, rendered in local Douglas fir, now lies at the end of a meandering grass path that, come spring, is flecked with primroses, bluebells, ribwort, and dandelions. Conifers and evergreens, from Scots pine to Japanese cedar, form a verdant tapestry that's framed by low, undulating rows of box hedge. To Hobson, it represents a micro-landscape, one that draws on his affection for the aesthetics and culture of Japanese gardens. Rather than a replica, it's a reflection of its immediate environment and a unique take on Japanese pruning techniques. Hobson first visited in the late 1990s as part of a travel scholarship while studying sculpture at the Slade School of Fine Art. His original purpose was to explore the culture of Hanami during the season of Sakura, cherry blossom, but he was instead seduced by the serenity of Kyoto's temple gardens and their trees. "They completely blew my mind," he says. "I couldn't understand why they looked so different from English trees. This was my kind of beauty." That first trip to Japan set him on another path. He decided to give up sculpting and, following a period teaching English in a commuter town north of Tokyo, began working at a tree nursery in rural Osaka. "It was utterly alien to me," he says. "I'd never even picked up a pair of succoteers before." The experience tapped into his interest in the interplay between nature and cultivation. Back in England, he started working with Angus White at Architectural Plants in West Sussex, who made his name growing sculptural plants and trees, then considered exotic varieties. There he attracted as much attention for his pruning wizardry as he did for his armory of precision-made tools, especially the scissors and succoteers that he brought back from Japan. Then came the light bulb moment. "I suddenly thought, hang on a minute, why can't you get these here?" Together with Keiko, he began importing lightweight aluminum Japanese tripod ladders to sell at open gardens and rural fairs across England. "People went mad for the ladders," he said. "They totally sold out." With the help of a modest £3,000 bank loan, Niwaki's curated garden paraphernalia, much of it now specially adapted to suit heavier-handed Westerners' needs, became a word-of-mouth hit. "Japanese tools, such as succoteers, are much better than European ones," Hobson continues. "They're far simpler, made to last, and depend on good design and materials." In Japan, blacksmithing has a long and revered history. During the Meiji Restoration of the 1870s and 1880s, when carrying weapons on the streets was outlawed, swordsmiths, whose skills date to the 3rd century, became blacksmiths. Rather than focus on cheap production or gimmicky products, the goal in Japan remains constant refinement. "Nothing really changes, as it's already perfect," Hobson says. Leading the way back inside his home, Hobson takes a seat at the expansive, custom-created desk in his study. The cabin acts as a microcosm and showcase for the brand's philosophy. "I wanted it to feel like a domestic Niwaki," he says of the space, "a place to think and write." The shelves are filled with books on plants, trees, and woodlands, his camera collection, a beloved Rark music player, Japanese knickknacks, and an array of early catalogs that comprise a miniature archive of Niwaki's visual history. Today, the brand's offering extends to nearly 300 items, ranging from the best-selling steel-shafted golden spade from 36 pounds to oak-handled lopping shears, 99 pounds, Okayama denim work trousers, 239 pounds, and stainless steel stovetop kettles, 169 pounds. Unsurprisingly, revenue doubled during lockdown, with a further 80% growth in the years since the pandemic. Current turnover is 7 million pounds. While tools still comprise 75% of the product line, the growing fashionability of gardening has led to collaborations with designers including Paul Smith and L.A. Kishimoto, and, most recently, Atsushi Hasegawa, head of creative at the Newt Hotel in Somerset, on tools, clothing, and accessories. The 30-strong team, meanwhile, is scattered between its London Chiltern Street shop, an office in Tokyo, and the rural HQ on the Dorset-Wilshire border, which spans a vast hangar-like storage warehouse, as well as offices and a showroom based on an old dairy farm. Much like Hobson and Keiko and the company they have created, their 1960s home is marked by modest understatement, its slow evolution interrupted by sudden flurries of activity. After the addition of a first floor and the opening up of the living space, the latest improvement, fused together with the study, is a bijou micro-cement-clad Japanese wet room and an airy side return brimming with garden utensils and implements. Every corner of the white-walled interior is hung with canvases by Hobson's late father, Tim Hobson, who studied architecture and then became a stockbroker. Fluid depictions of the family's Devon seaside holidays and keenly observed glimpses of Japanese life. "This is the best view of the garden," he says, gesturing from his deck to the green beyond, where he often begins or ends his day. It's from this vantage point that he decides on his next garden edit. Hobson, who already stands 6 feet 6 inches tall, is most often found towering above the broccoli-like boughs of his chopped and coppiced green olives, pruning saw and succoteers in hand. "It's all about these big, bold gestures. It's my version of sculpting," he says. "I'm not really a plantsman. If things look pretty, it's by chance. I'm most interested in how the Japanese keep trees on a domestic scale, maintaining the feel of a forest, but in an intimate space. Suddenly I'll go and chop off a big branch or make a small tweak," he says, before adding, "even one tiny action can have big consequences." The spectacle is enticing and suggestive of spick and span efficiency. Hobson has not only brought home the Japanese gardener's artisanal tools, but a sense of order, restraint, and precision that has become a way of life, one that suggests you can prune your way to happiness. We close this week with excerpts from an article by Stephen Wallace, published on August 25th in the New York Times, part of the design special section about new design solutions for healthy living. How to cultivate a feel-good garden. Horticulturalists and herbalists share tips for nurturing plants with health benefits. Gardening, as numerous studies have found, is good for us. The shoveling and weed pulling, the exposure to fresh air and sunshine, the sensory engagement with nature, all of that is believed to lower rates of hypertension and heart disease and improve mental well-being. Digging in the soil with our hands may even have a positive impact on our microbiome. But gardens can also promote health directly through their bounty as a source of herbal remedies and medicines. It's an opportunity many gardeners overlook. "People are often surprised by how many plants have medicinal and therapeutic value," said Devin Young, who blogs at nittygrittylife.com, one word, and whose most recent book is The Homegrown Herbal Apothecary. While harnessing the curative power of plants has become more of a niche activity in the age of lab-derived pharmaceuticals and off-the-shelf supplements, a simple internet search reveals that many common backyard flowers and shrubs, such as roses, hibiscus blooms, and Douglas fir needles, have health benefits. Of course, some plants are toxic to humans and pets, including parts of species that are used for wellness, so care is required. But there are online resources to consult, such as the Lady Bird Johnson Wildflower Center and the Plants for a Future databases. If you aim to create a beautiful and ecologically mindful garden that supports physical well-being, Bridge McCracken, the founder of Helia Land Design in West Stockbridge, Massachusetts, recommends prioritizing plants native to your region. Even if you never harvest the plants to make tea, tinctures, or salves, natives are appealing because they tend to be low maintenance, requiring less watering and fertilizer, and they're good collaborative citizens in the garden. When you're working with native plants, you're going to have a garden that is amazing for bees, for hummingbirds, for pollinating butterflies, for a whole spectrum of insects, Ms. McCracken said. She pointed out that many of the flowers and shrubs that are healthiest ecologically are also beneficial for human wellness. Her favorites include purple angelica, with its radiating umbrella-like bloom, spiky veronicastrum and agastache, cone flowers such as echinacea and rudbeckia, and various types of monarda, also known as bee balm. "Monardas are really beautiful to design with," she said, noting that bee balm can be used as an antiseptic, a mouthwash, and a cold remedy. Monarda punctata in particular is just gorgeous with its colored bracts, and it stays in bloom for 6-8 weeks. Selecting the right mix of flowers, herbs, and shrubs involves listening to the land and what plants grow well there, she said. In her own garden, she puts most of her tea plants, used for herbal brews and remedies in secondary zones, away from the house, and keeps plants with unharvested blooms closer so she can enjoy their beauty. Ethan Dropkin, a designer and horticulture specialist at Larry Wiener Landscape Associates, a firm based in Glenside, Pennsylvania, often takes a similar approach to residential projects. He and his fellow designers plan aesthetically structured human-centric areas close to the house, he said. While the farther out you get, we usually go more naturalistic. The firm is known for meadow landscapes, where summertime expanses of undulating grasses might be flecked with purple echinacea, pink Joe Pye weed, yellow rudbeckia and goldenrod, orange butterfly weed, and the white thistle-like flower heads of rattlesnake master, all natives that have uses in herbal medicine. Among other attractive ecological plants that have therapeutic value, Mr. Dropkin pointed to native mints, including the monardas and mountain mint, which has small white flowers and blooms most of the summer, though he cautioned it can spread quite vigorously. He also highlighted yarrow, though not all varieties are native to the United States. They have antibacterial properties, so you can pick the leaves and put them on a cut, or you crush them up into a poultice. And you can throw them in hot water and you make tea, he said. The leaves are evergreen and ferny looking, so they're very beautiful even when not in flower. They're also good for pollinators and act as a host plant for moths. When it comes to preparing herbal remedies, Ms. Young noted that a variety of preservation methods can be used, and they are typically dictated by the plant type. Anything with a fairly thin leaf or delicate flower can hang dry, she said. For fleshier, more succulent plants, she uses a dehydrator, while resinous plants go into the oven on a low setting. With some things, I'll create a tincture using them fresh, she said. Among her favorite natives are the coneflowers Echinacea and Rudbeckia. As a herbalist, I like to use the whole plant, the roots, the stem, the leaves, and the flowers, she said. You can either tincture fresh or prepare a tea, along with other better tasting herbs such as mint, and it works as a powerful immune stimulant. Interest in wellness gardens can take many forms, according to Dara Saville, the New Mexican author of The Ecology of Herbal Medicine and the founder of Albuquerque Herbalism, a community program that trains people to work with plants for healing purposes. Some of her students are interested in ecology, while others want to connect with indigenous healing traditions, she said. Many are people who have chronic health problems and are not receiving effective treatment through mainstream healthcare paradigms, so they're taking matters into their own hands. Ms. Saville described her own gardening style as feral. I let plants migrate around and show me where they want to be and who they want to be next to, she said. Topping her list of favorites is Yerba Mansa, a desert wetlands native long used medicinally in the region. Its therapeutic benefits include energizing your urinary system, your digestive system, your respiratory system, she said. It's antimicrobial and anti-inflammatory, she added. It just does all of these things simultaneously, invigorating your whole body to be healthier and more vital. Plus, it has gorgeous white flowers and is a really beautiful addition to the garden. Showcasing the visual allure of native wellness plants has been a personal mission for Mihalis Petru, a landscape and floral designer in New York City. After a friend entrusted him with an abandoned lot in Astoria, Queens, close to a decade ago, he set about installing planters and beds teeming with flowering natives. At one point, I had over 400 species there, Mr. Petru said. He began using them in fashion photo shoots for Oscar de la Renta and magazines like Numero and Out, as well as installments for events. Instead of going to the flower market, I would head to my garden in Queens and harvest fresh native plants that look spectacular, he said. Bee balm, echinacea, goldenrod, Joe Pye weed, and red columbine are all part of his repertoire. Some he also uses for herbal teas, yarrow, agastache, and mountain mint among them. They're so tasty and aromatic, he said. I just boil them fresh without drying them. It's a little more bitter when they're fresh, but I actually like that. Mr. Petru said he sees parallels between the worlds of gardening and fashion, specifically the correlation between looking good and feeling good, and how that creates positive energy and inspiration. Ms. Young echoed that sentiment. Art is therapy and landscaping is art, she said. Having a wellness garden that is beautiful, that's medicine in itself. That's it for episode 310. Until the next time.